14 minutes before 7, mainly clear, minus 20 degrees in Ottawa, but it feels like minus 29. Winds from the southwest at 13 kilometers per hour. Today's high, minus 10 degrees. Well, Momin Khawaja was the first Canadian charged under Canada's Anti-Terrorism Act. Khawaja, who was born and raised in Ottawa, was convicted for taking part in a London bomb plot. That was 10 years ago. And since then, other cases of homegrown terrorism have surfaced. It's an area that's received a lot of study in recent years, and my next guest is in town to lead a talk on violence, religion, and radicalization. Lauren Dawson is a sociology professor at the University of Waterloo. He's here in town. He joins me this morning. Morning, Lauren.
Oh, pleased to be here.
Thank you very much for coming in. Could we start by getting you to describe the profile of a person at risk of becoming radicalized?
Well, that's always a little hard to do. There isn't a specific profile in any kind of exacting sense. For about 10 years or more, scholars intensely tried to figure out a nice, simple profile, the way the law enforcement officials would have appreciated having. Mm-hmm. And the situation is much more diverse, but there are pretty strong commonalities. I mean, we are overwhelmingly dealing with young men. We're dealing with young men that probably have some kind of struggle over who they are, basic identity issues in mid-adolescence, late adolescence. And there's another interesting feature that I always stress. These are young men who, under some circumstances, might end up doing something like getting involved in youth gangs. But what makes them different from someone that might get involved in a youth gang is they have a really strong sense of moral orientation. Mm. They're basically really good kids. They're kids who want to make a difference in the world, and they want to live by the values they've been socialized to, even though they may get a peculiar interpretation of those values.
You've said that in some ways they're straddling two worlds. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so if we're talking in the case of what, of course, we've been dealing with mainly for the last decade or so, the overwhelming greatest threat has been from Salafi jihadist terrorism. So in this case, in the West, we're talking about mainly children of immigrants. Either they themselves are immigrants or they're the children of immigrants. And in those cases, they really are trying to straddle the two worlds. They're trying to fit into their new society. If they're young men, they're also really trying to fit in with their peers. But they have a sense that they never, ever adequately will. And subtle elements of marginalization or racism will affect them so they feel alienated a bit from the society. But they're also clear they do not want to identify with their parents' very traditional way of doing things, their traditional cultural ways of doing things, whether it be Pakistani, Moroccan, or whatever the case may be. So they're torn between these two kind of primary identity foci. And then the new kind of rendering of Islam that the Salafi jihadist viewpoint presents offers a third option, offers a new way of engaging the world and becoming somebody.
You know, in an interview that Momin Khawaja gave a few years ago, he spoke about his radicalization as being a very gradual process. Is that typical, or is it more sudden than that?
No, on the whole, it is gradual. It may appear, and what I do in my case, my background is in sociology of religion, and particularly in conversion studies, and also how people join rather unusual or extreme religious groups. And from the outsider's perspective, in all these cases, things appear relatively sudden. They appear shocking to parents and others. But a careful study and interview with individuals reveals that usually they've been undergoing a long process of struggle over issues. They've just kept it very interior and to themselves. So I would accept that it's probably a very gradual process until it arrives at a certain kind of breaking point. And then once it breaks in direction of the new identity, the more radical orientation, then it can escalate in a quite rapid pace. Most people only see the latter part.
In the past, it seemed to me that sort of the headlines, the news about radicalization involve white supremacists or perhaps American militia or survivalist movements. But we're talking more religious radicalization. What's behind that shift? Is that our demographics as a nation?
Yeah, I would caution that actually the white supremacist sort of militia movement is doing fine in the United States, and if anything is stronger now than it was 10 years ago. It's just beneath the surface of attention for the most part. And the religious component really comes into play. Mainly it is just because of the struggles with events in the Middle East and in countries in the Middle East, and Islam being the dominant religion there, Islam has become a focal point for protest against things happening in there in the Middle East. And the leaders, of course, of a Salafi jihadist viewpoint think that the West is very much behind many of the problems in the their native countries. So they are directing attention to fighting the faraway enemy, the Western enemy. Religion, though, is does add a new and key factor, and this is something that I often think security forces underplay. We ourselves, for the most part, come from very secular backgrounds in Canada, and it's hard for us to understand how individuals can become committed to really extreme and strong religious viewpoints. But it's that commitment to a religious viewpoint that adds this element of transcendence. And this element of transcendence and the symbolic significance of acts can really inspire people to engage in a much more extreme behaviors and be willing to undertake extreme behaviors for reasons that seem, inexplicable or irrational to those from the outside. But from inside their worldview, their religious worldview, you can usually demonstrate how it makes considerable sense.
Do you think we're doing enough to address homegrown terrorism?
Yes, I think Canada is, in a sense. I mean, I know that the CSIS and the RCMP, in particular in Canada, have been very attentive to what scholars are saying and to what's going on in the world. They're regularly bringing speakers into Ottawa from around the world and elsewhere to keep them apprised of things. The catch that we're not doing, I suppose, at this point is I would have to honestly say I have a vested interest, but I don't think enough money is being invested in primary research right here in Canada. We still lag behind the United States and United Kingdom, Netherlands, and other countries that are pouring more dollars directly into doing research on their own population and the threatening elements with their own population, not by security forces, but by scholars that can operate a bit more independently.
We only have a few moments left, but I have to ask you, how hopeful are you that we can put an end or diminish the amount of radicalization of Canadian youth?
Well, you know, in a certain sense, I think the amount, in a sense, can be diminished through through research, through understanding, through the development of better prevention programs, because we have a better grasp of what's happening to people who might radicalize. But I also always caution that the conditions, the basic conditions that create radicalization, are here to stay. They're part of a late modern social environment, and really there's little we can do to control those larger factors.
Good luck with your talk today, Lauren. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
Lauren Dawson, a sociology professor at the University of Waterloo who specializes in violence, religion, and radicalization. He's off to the Parliamentary Restaurant for an 8 a.m. talk on homegrown terrorism. It's being sponsored by the Federation for the Humanities and Social Sciences.